I've been in so many shows where the understudy made such a lovely difference for the cast because everybody was present.
The Working Actor NYC, he's Patrick Richwood.
Benjamin House.
This episode of The Working Actor NYC may contain profanity and some adult concepts, so please use your discretion.
Hey, you, hey. Patrick Richwood.
Hey.
Hey, it's nice to see your face again. But what are we talking about today?
I thought we could talk about the world of understudies.
And what
enormous...
I have knowledge about this.
I know you do. And so do I.
So how many times have you understudied?
I have understudied 3 times. It's funny because I would never have dreamed that I would say that in my career. But I've understudied two musicals and a play.
Yeah.
I understudied, and I've understudied people who I'm nothing like and people who I'm like, you know, I'm perfect for the part and so are they, but we're not anything alike.
Isn't that fascinating though? You always, yeah. Like covering someone, you're completely different, but.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, people are used to thinking that, you know, the Shirley MacLaine story, right? About when she was in the chorus of the Pajama Game.
Oh, was it?
And
Pajama
she
Game,
was,
right?
She was, I may have this wrong, but I think it was, they were looking at who was going to, she covered Carol Haney, who played the lead and who was a Broadway star and who had a real short hip haircut for the 50s and like a pixie haircut. Right. And Shirley MacLaine wanted to, either she was covering the role or she wanted to be chosen to cover the role. She was in the ensemble. She got the exact same haircut.
Oh.
And she didn't look like her. And she had to, you know, do wigs and stuff in other parts, but she had that haircut. So in their mind, they looked like sisters.
Isn't that crazy?
Very smart. Very smart. And that show she went on, and I think that's what sent Shirley MacLaine on her way. She became... You know, she was the understudy that got made good. Yes, I have understudied. I understudied Peter Scolari and John Tracy Egan both in a play at Playwrights Horizons. And I went on for John and I nailed it and got to plant a big old kiss on Peter Scolari's face and mouth. And then we became really good friends because we bonded over our mutual garlic breath.
After you've shared spittle, there's a connection,
exactly.
You know.
Right. No, and yes, that's such a loss. I just adored him. And then I understudied the role of Moonface in Anything Goes at the Goodspeed, and I went on.
I feel
like
I might have seen that performance.
Yes, that's how we met. That was when fate struck.
Oh, it's all coming back to me now.
Is it? Is it? Oh, yeah. You were in the second row of the ensemble, weren't you? I remember noticing you. Then I also understudied. The third time was just last summer in Bucks County. I was understudying a wonderful role in Noises Off. In all three cases, I sweat bullets. I did, you know, I bought out all the Post-its in Staples and got different colored pens and, you know, you do all that stuff.
And obviously you were prepared. So what took you by surprise when you went on? Like, what is it that made you sweat bullets?
Actually, it depends on the show. What
each experience is different.
I didn't sweat bullets in the play. I knew it and I knew it. And it was just lovely. And in all three cases, I'm so happy to say that I was prepared enough, much to my own surprise, that I could actually step into the role, not just the track, and
right.
own it and find things and live it, so that I had the joy of that experience in the sandbox for the nights that I was on, or the days that I was on, but. I would say that the thing that's surprised me the most as an understudy at all has been when other people get nervous for you and go up. They drop lines because they're so nervous. They're so hoping that everything's going to go great, that, you know, that they flub up and then you're like, oh, I'll fix that.
Well, because they're used to seeing it done a different way. And then, of course, you do something interesting and all of a sudden you're just like, oh, wait, what? Oh, shit, that was my line. Okay, great. We're back on track.
Yeah. Now, mind you, I am not of the school of belief, and I don't agree with anyone who is, that the understudy should go on and do their own thing. I went on to do John's show or Stephen's show or Peter's show or whoever I was understudying. I'm doing their show. Right. I'm just doing, it's me. So it's going to be different. There's going to be nuances that are different. There's going to be slight timing variations and you work all that out when you get put in. Like, for instance, Mary Lou Henner, when she was playing her role with John, we played husband and wife. And when John is 6'2", I think, or 6'1", and big strapping guy. So he could dip her in a Gomez and Morticia kiss, And I didn't want to try that. I didn't want to try that at all. Mary Lou and I are the same height and weight, probably. So I'm like, I'm a scrawny. So I said, why don't we do a cara mia, I'll just pull you towards me and we'll just like that. Okay, great. We worked it all out because you got to figure, well, you're in your body. You're not in theirs. You're going to do. On the other hand, I could do things in the show that John didn't choose to do because he didn't feel he could or wanted to with his body.
So now here's a question about, so I have been in a situation where another understudy went on, did a take on a line that we all thought was hilarious. So I added that in, folded that little take into my track. And the principal, the guy who we were both understudying, he folded it into his because it was a funny bit. And unfortunately, the guy who came up with that idea got a little upset that other people were using his idea, that other actors were using his idea.
That's just a lack of generosity that I don't, what can you do?
That's my bit. I came up with that.
It would be if let's say I did something and then somebody else on stage started doing it at this, then I would be like, that's, what are you doing? That's mine. I already came up with that. There are people that want to take your juice. And what can you do? You just figure there's more where that came from.
Exactly. That's kind of it. It's just like, can't be too precious about it. You've just got to remember that people paid a lot of money to see somebody else. So don't get too precious about it all. I hope I don't get in trouble for saying this, but I knew when I went on for Jim Parsons in A Man of No Importance, I had such confidence in what I was doing and what I was bringing to the role. That I didn't have any fear about that. It was also the case that it was a 200 seat theater and we were already sold out. So it wasn't like I knew that I was responsible for a drop in ticket sales because Jim Parsons was out with COVID,
On the other hand, there are times when you actually make the difference for the cast. I've been in so many shows where the understudy made such a lovely difference for the cast because everybody was present. Everybody was so present and they're really listening. And of course, everybody's rallying, or 99% of the people in a show are rallying around that understudy and going, what do you need? This is fun. This is exciting.
Yeah.
This is
fun. Yeah. Welcome to the sandbox. Let's play together. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I will also say, my last experience as an understudy in Bucks County this past summer will be my last experience as an understudy because I realized it's not my lane. It's just not my lane. And I told my sister, she goes, but it's the same thing. And I'm like, it's not the same thing. It's a whole different, you're on a different playground. You really are. Unless you're going on, once people are confident, like in your put in, or before you're put in, if you've got confidence and you know you're going to be fine, and people sense that, they start to fold you into the tribe. But I really experienced a phenomenon, an understudy phenomenon that is widely reported, which is the invisibility cloak.
Oh, it's brutal, dude. I mean, I have been an understudy so many times, and one experience in particular, the director hated understudy so much that he told the cast to not talk to us. Like, we weren't brought into the process until tech. We weren't allowed to see any of the rehearsals. We weren't even brought into the process until tech, and we had to sit in specific seats in the theater. We weren't allowed to sit anywhere else during the tech. We weren't allowed to see. It was so bizarre. And yeah, there was something clearly some understudy sometime had wronged him terribly. It made some of the people in the cast go, I don't want these people to feel ostracized. Like, no, talk to me, come and be my friend, sit by me at lunch sort of thing. Whereas I can tell you there was one person in that cast who didn't even speak to me until after I had performed with her on stage. And after the performance, she might have said, oh, well done to me or something. And those are the first words that she ever spoke to me. You know, it was very strange. I hadn't had it that severe before.
People should know also that with understudies, depending on the theater, even on Broadway, sometimes there's just no place for them. You're like relegated to the lobby or the lounge between the bathrooms at the Lyceum, where my friend Michael understudied in the Nance. They had to sit in the lounge between the bathrooms in the basement because that was where the pass door to the backstage was, and there wasn't a dressing room for them in the theater. There wasn't a place for them to be. That's where they were, in the lobby, in the lounge.
It's the same,
you know,
it's the same Classic Stage. The lobby of Classic Stage is this cafe. We had to sit in the cafe because there just wasn't, they had such a tiny little theater. There just wasn't room for us.
Yeah. So that doesn't feel great either. You're sitting around. You feel like you can't help but feel a little bit like you're in the way because nobody's made a place for you at the table.
Right.
And that is part of the job description. You get used to it, but it's never, it always feels a little broken. That always feels like, why don't they fix this? But what are you going to do? I remember being surprised with Noises Off because I'm so used to people knowing, this will sound conceited, but I'm used to people knowing who I am or figuring out who I am and kind of giving me a certain amount of just basic respect, you know, like you're one of the, you're a player. And in that case, it really didn't, it was slow coming. If people were aware of who I was or what my background and my resume was, they weren't showing it. And I think part of it is because that's such a behemoth of a show. And everybody was like sort of, you know, praying that they were going to get it, you know.
They got other shit to worry about at them.
That's what I kept reminding myself. I kept doing the four agreements, take nothing personally, because you have to. But I did also notice it really is a phenomenon. It's a Harry Potter's invisibility cloak. I would go up to conversations and I swear to God, I know now, because I know these people and I really like them and respect them, I know now that it was unconscious. But I would walk up to a social conversation on a break in the, you know, in the green, you know, in the common area and join in like you do. And people would just walk away. I'd be in the middle of a sentence. People would just leave. It was like I was invisible. And
they'd be like, oh no, we don't need any props right now. Thank you though.
Exactly.
They thought you were the prop guy.
Are you with the caterer? Do you think you could get pink jelly beans for
can
us?
I have I'd really like a sandwich. Thank you.
They're missing. It was strange. And then when I went on, when I was preparing to go on, the invisibility cloak started to come off. And by the time I was like a day or two out from going on in that show, everybody was on board. And after, by the time we were after my put in, I was one of the gang completely. And I was treated that way from then on.
And then not all experiences are like that. I just want you to know it's not always like that. I have been in situations where, for whatever reason, during a rehearsal, one of the principal actors is away. And so the understudy just steps in, or one of the swings steps in, and everybody gets delighted that there's somebody new to play with, and there's a different slightly different take, or a slightly, and nobody's married to anything yet.
Somebody from the ensemble stepped in for me, and he was great. And the person who swung in for him was not, shall we say, burdened with talent.
The thing that I have learned as an understudy is that there is no substitute for preparation. And I had to learn that lesson the hard way. I was doing the first national tour of Shrek, the musical, and there were two of us understudying the Lord Farquaad role. And the other understudy had been a swing in the Broadway production. And I was brand new to the project, hadn't done it before. Come to find out later that they had been having some issues with the actor playing Lord Farquaad. Not with him personally, but his performance. They weren't in love with his performance, and I'm not sure. Anyway, that actor playing Lord Farquaad called out of the show on the Saturday matinee. Now, the show opened on the Sunday matinee. Saturday matinee, the Lord Farquaad called out.
Like a preview. It was a preview?
It was a preview. It was we had two previews to go, and then we were going to open. So on the Saturday matinee, the lead actor called out, and they put the other understudy on because he had been a swing on the Broadway show. He had, and to be honest, I was not probably prepared to go on. Like, I could have gotten up to speed, but it wouldn't have been like, there was a lot to that role. I mean, on the knees, in the costumes, you know, there was a quick change, all the rest of it.
On the knees part, you have down, but everything else would be.
Yeah. That I have some practice with.
You've got lots of practice.
So
it's disgusting.
They saw the other understudy do the Saturday matinee. And at the intermission of that Saturday matinee, the producers went to his dressing room and said to him, "You will be playing the role of Lord Farquaad at tomorrow's opening performance." They had realized that the other actor, who they thought they could get up to the level of performance that they wanted that they had wanted from the beginning. And it wasn't that the other actor was unprepared or was bad or anything. He just had a different take on the role. And initially, and it is funny, but it's just not the
what
movie
they wanted.
And it's not what they wanted. And so when the other understudy showed up and showed the performance that they were used to seeing on Broadway, that Chris Sieber had done on Broadway for over a year, they were like, "Oh, that's it. That's it. That's what we want. That's what we want. Great. So you are going to be playing." So they bumped him up.
They had to buy the other guy out. They had to buy the other guy out right then and there.
It was super ugly.
Oh, yeah.
And then they bought him out. And so the understudy got bumped up to the role on opening, like right the day before opening, and played it for the rest of the tour. And in my heart, I was devastated because I was like, it could have been me. It could have been me. If they had just given me the chance to do my Lord Farquaad, then they could have seen that I had something to bring to the role instead. But that's not what happened, Benjamin. You weren't prepared. They didn't give you the chance. So the next time that I understudied a major role, it was the first national tour of Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, and I was understudying Willy Wonka. So from day one, and there were two of us understudying Willy Wonka, and from day one, I made it my mission to make sure that not only was I on top of all of my own material and my own track in the ensemble, I was going to be on top of every single little thing that Willy Wonka did and said, and I knew every note that he had been given, and I had folded it all in, and I was ready. And so sure enough, while we were in previews in Buffalo, the Willy Wonka wasn't feeling, 100%, so he might be calling out. So they were like, "Hey," similar thing, before a matinee on a Saturday, "What time can you be at the theater?" I was like, 9:30, 10 o'clock, let's go, and I was ready to do it, because I was like, never again will I not be prepared. I am going to be prepared. And, eventually they needed me to go on a lot. So I feel like, that lesson, don't wait to learn that lesson.
The opportunity provided to me as from understudying and provided to everyone is that you get the opportunity to pull up your grown-up pants and go, it's me. It's not going to be anybody else. I'm the one that's either going to drive the car off the cliff and careen into the ravine and crash and burn into a million flames, or and take the whole show down with me like a Jenga, or or I'm the one driving the car. So let's
and I'm going to make those hairpin turns all the way up and down that cliff, all the way up and down that mountain.
That's right.
Some of them will be a little scary for people.
I am Mario fucking Andretti. Mario fucking Andretti, bitches. Look out. Just have my pit crew ready when I stop. That's all. You know, like, and I did have that. I have had that experience where I was going in one direction and I thought, oh, this is an impossible situation. I'm being set up to fail. There's no way I'm going to be able to do it. Because in that particular case, there wasn't any room for understudy rehearsals. I went on very early on in the very, like our fifth performance or something. So I had to take matters into my own hand and say, either I accept this scenario or I change the narrative. So I changed the narrative and said, right, no, this is how it's going to go. And then I began to create that for myself. I really did. I said, what's this going to look like? Mm-hmm. I did. I manifested it and I started with, what do I want it to look like? How do I feel when I wake up that morning? What's the put in like? How do the others feel? The people that are around me, how do I leave them feeling? Mind you, I did also get all the shit that was stirring around in my brain, you know, all those bees. I kind of got those down on paper. I wrote it all down and said, this is all the things I'm concerned about. And then I was able to kind of leave it on the paper and get to back to, oh, you know,
that
was really helpful.
Like, that's such a great technique, though, of if anything, if you're laying awake at night and your brain is just going like this and this and this and this and this around, knotting some problem into a tight little ball, if you just start writing it down in your journal, get it on the paper, just get it out of your head and onto the paper, and
onto
all of a
sudden
your brain lets you rest.
Breathe. Well, you know, I always think of those things as like bees. You know, they're buzzing around and pretty, you can't tell one bee from another. You can't tell Phyllis from George, from Simon, from, you know, Alfonso. They're all buzzing around.
I love that you've named your bees after sitcom characters from the 80s.
Yeah, so understudying does provide you with opportunities that are golden. I just don't want to keep having that opportunity. I planted my flag on Everest. I did it. Great. Onward. I don't want to do that anymore.
That was me with tap dancing. As soon as I played Cosmo Brown and Singing in the Rain once, I was like, oh, great. I don't have to tap anymore. I don't have to. I played Cosmo. I'm out. You're all better than I am. I'm good.
I have earned the right to say, I don't want to do it. I've done it. I've tried it three times. It's just not my thing. But I really, really take my hat off to those who do it and do it well, because I'm seeing it right now in our show. Right now.
Right. It's a position that can carry a lot of weight and responsibility. And the key to executing it gracefully is to let that weight just be where it is and not put it right here. You can put it in your backpack, but don't carry it in front of you or carry it on your shoulders. Susan Blackwell said to me, you are one cool customer when you're going on. And it's true, because worrying about it and feeling that weight is not going to help my performance. I've done the work. I know I've done the work, and I just have to let it be and stay present with the people that I'm on stage with.
I don't know how much of the subject we covered.
I don't know either.
We'll find out. We'll find
but
out.
I'm sure our listeners will let us know what things we left.
Because they're going to click the thing, and they're going to push the thing.
They're gonna hit a thumbs up.
And they're gonna like the thing.
They're gonna like and they're gonna subscribe and they're gonna ask us questions. Now that we have a YouTube channel, feel free to ask us any questions that you have about being a working actor in New York City in the comments down below. And or on our Instagram page at The Working Actor NYC. Because we'll answer them.
And you can see all the episodes and everything. You can have a big Patrick and Benjamin party. We'll be there with you in spirit.
You can go down our rabbit hole.
See, we're back to the on the knees.
Does that sound wrong?
Oh, no, that doesn't sound wrong. No.